There will be no standalone Irish Language Act. That was the message from the DUP leader Arlene Foster yesterday. Usually tight-lipped about the detail in the ongoing power-sharing negotiations, Mrs. Foster said she wanted to clarify matters because some speculation had been off the mark.
There won't be a freestanding Irish Language Act. We've always made that very clear. There won't be compulsory Irish in schools. There won't be anyone forced to learn Irish language. There won't be quotas in the civil service. And there won't be bilingual directional signs. So all of that sort of speculation is so far out there. And I just want to make it very clear that that is certainly not the territory we're in.
Well, when you say there won't be a freestanding Irish Language Act, does the package that you're discussing involve three separate acts, Irish, Ulster, Scots and another cultural act, somehow tied together?
Well, I think what we're trying to find is an accommodation. And I said back in September, actually, August of last year, that what we wanted to do was to find an accommodation where one language or culture wasn't given primacy over the other language or culture, and that we valued the fact that there are Irish language speakers living in Northern Ireland who want to speak in Irish, and that's fine, but they cannot impinge on the rights of those of us who don't speak the Irish language. So what I'm trying to find is an accommodation, a way forward where we can have a genuinely shared space in Northern Ireland. But I have to be very careful that what we don't have is cultural or language supremacy, and that's what I'm determined not to have.
So does the package that you're discussing involve either an Irish Language Act or maybe an Irish Language Bill linked together with these other acts, Ulster, Scots and other cultural matters?
Well, as I said, there are still gaps in relation to the negotiations that are ongoing. We're working our way through those gaps, but I just felt it was important to say today that some of the speculation, some of the political commentary indeed, that has been out there has been so far wide of the mark that it merited me saying something today.
Arlene Foster there speaking to the BBC political editor Mark Devonport. 030 30 80 55 55 on the phones. We have TUV leader Jim Allister with us and the Alliance MLA Paula Bradshaw. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Jim, we'll start with you if you don't mind. Do you welcome Arlene Foster's clarification that there won't be a standalone Irish Language Act?
Well, I welcome it as far as it goes, and I think she found reverse gear because of the pressure which was coming from the right across the unionist community that she ought not to go to where she was headed. But she has left open so many questions, which equally are loaded with the dangers that many fear in regard to an Irish Language Act. Like, is Irish to become, under the Arlene Foster vision, an official language in Northern Ireland? Is any legislation to be rights-based? If so, then, of course, its parameters are constantly pushed out through publicly funded judicial reviews. Is there to be a enforcer, an Irish language commissioner, who would be enforcing the various provisions, such as we have in Wales, with very traumatic consequences? Would there be what about our long proclaimed stand against the expense of Irish Irish language legislation? We heard yesterday on the BBC airwaves the commissioner from Wales conceding that in Wales it was costing tens of millions of pounds per annum.
You have plenty of questions. Jim, yourself, but it's interesting because there were a few things that she did rule out yesterday in that chat with Mark. No compulsory Irish language in schools, no one would be forced to learn Irish, there would be no quotas for Irish speakers in the civil service, and there would be no bilingual road signs. So she directional road signs. So there, you know, she has outlined some elements of what would not be. Do you think it's interesting that she picked those, or is that being unfair?
No, I think that is interesting. I think it was easy to pick off the more extreme demands of the Irish language zealots and to say we're not going there. But I think there's a couple of things about that. The experience of language legislation elsewhere is that it starts in relatively mild form. In Wales, the first act was in the 60s, then you had the 93 Act, now you have 2015 Act, and it has been a rolling process where rights have been added upon rights to the point where now it's all pervasive, and similar situation is evolving in Scotland. So it's the starting of the process that is important. And to say, for example, there'll be no quotas, yes, I'm sure there won't be formal quotas in the public service, but if you create a right to be dealt with when you interface with the public service in Irish, then you inevitably create preferment when it comes to recruitment for those who can meet that interface in Irish by being able to
speak. It's the implementation
Irish
behind it that you have an issue with. To go back to the road sign issue, Jim, what do you make of the... Because I know particulars are important, bilingual directional road signs, because if you go to certain parts of Belfast and you look at street signs, so for example, a certain street in West Belfast, it will already have the name in English and in Irish. And you get that in different parts of Northern Ireland. So what do you make of that and that specific there, the language that she has used, directional road signs?
Well, we do have this facility whereby upon local demand, which is demonstrated to be on the side of having duality in street names, you can have that. I think the demand in respect of directional road signs is that when you head up the M1, for example, at every exit, you will have the name in both English and Irish. The directional road signs, if you're going to Ballymena or Portrush or wherever, will be dual road signs. That's what the directional road signs are concerned, and that's different from street names. So we already have that provision, as we already have huge provision for the Irish language with its own education system.
Yeah, but could her choice of language, could her choice of language there, could it suggest the fact that we already have some street signs in Irish and in English in Northern Ireland? She's ruled out now the directional road signs. So as you said, going up the motorway, you'll not see Banbridge or Ballymena in English and Irish as well. But you could see a compulsory element of the street name ruled out. We already have it in partial parts of the country across the rest of Northern Ireland. Do you read that into that?
Well, it's possible to read that into it in that if she was choosing her words carefully, she was only ruling out directional road signs. I don't know, but I know this, that the unionist community is fairly unanimous in its view that there has been enough given on this subject, because it is a politicised campaign. It's not about helping a downtrodden language. It's not as if there are people who can only speak Irish, are inefficient in English, and are being deprived. Yes, there are people like that in Northern Ireland, but they're Poles, they're Lithuanians. But no one's talking about a Polish language act or a Lithuanian language act. They're expected to make do as best they can in English. And most of the people who profess themselves to be Irish are those who are very efficient and very fluent in English. And therefore it is a nonsense, and of course a nonsense that we can't afford, because tens of millions of pounds...
Jim, we come back to this then, and you start calling things a nonsense, and you know when you do that you will offend certain people, and is there any need for that?
Well, there's certainly no need for Irish language
in Europe, but that's in your opinion. But to describe something as nonsense...
Sorry, we're in a situation where we have vast hospital deficits in terms of expenditure. Education's in the same pickle. We can't even fix our potholes. And we have these zealots who think we should spend tens of millions to stroke their ego on the Irish language.
Let me bring in Paula Bradshaw.
There should be better priorities than that.
Okay, Paula Bradshaw from the Alliance Party. Where does your party stand in terms of this?
Okay, well, first of all, I would like to express my sympathy to the family of the murdered man last night and the wider Pullglass community. Secondly, I really do hope that you're going to afford me the same amount of time as you've given Jim, not just today, but across this week, because there has been so many erroneous, hysterical statements around this, around the potential for this Irish Language Act and Cultural Act that they need to be debunked. We brought forward a set of proposals last September after speaking to the political parties over the course of the summer to bring forward what we think is the foundation for a really robust, politically capable set of proposals to address language and cultural issues here in Northern Ireland and to address past agreements. I very much welcome what Arlene did yesterday. She came out and she started to debunk these issues herself. What we are doing is really looking at all aspects of the Indigenous languages, plus those minority languages that are here in Northern Ireland, like Polish, and bringing forward or proposing three bills that would look at how all of those are catered for and the communities that speak those languages within a legislative framework.
So three bills, Jim.
Well, it doesn't matter how you dress this up, whether you put a few tartan bows on it and ribbons. The reality is that it's obvious that Arlene Foster is anticipating some form of Irish language legislation. The very thing that she emphatically, with great disdain, indicated so publicly during the previous Assembly election would not happen on her watch.
Standalone, she said. So it's interesting.
She's going to concede that.
Yeah, it's interesting the difference, Paula, from what Arlene said yesterday. She was asked by Mark Davenport three times whether the package she is discussing includes an Irish Language Act or bill, but didn't directly answer that question. Did you make anything of that yourself?
Well, I thought it was positive, and I think it very much reflects how this process can go forward. I just want to address another issue that Jim has repeated this week, that this Irish Language Act and the proposals will hollow out Britishness. I have a very close family relative. He serves in the British Armed Forces, and I couldn't be more proud of him. And I have said to Sinn Féin on two occasions that I will never sign up or agree to any legislation that would discriminate against him or anybody else in the armed forces, past, present or future. Any child that has gone through our education system who didn't learn Irish. So all of this stuff, trying to scaremonger people, scare them into thinking that, because I didn't learn Irish, I'm going to be discriminated against. Not on my watch, not on Alliance Party's watch. This is about the language
itself. Do you want a rights-based Irish Language Act?
I have said repeatedly, Jim, you obviously have a very short memory, we do not support a rights-based approach to this. We do not.
So
we think that Scottish model...
How is it rolled out?
I did not interrupt you. Pardon?
How is it rolled out if it's not rights-based?
It is through... We do think that there needs to be a languages commissioner, whether or not that's just Irish or a collective language, that they would then work with each of the departments and down to local government and come up with a policy framework through which Irish can be developed. Some sections of public service, it may not need to be rolled out at all, but this process would be facilitated through a commissioner's office. They would not have the power...
A rolling process where it becomes all pervasive in the end.
Jim, what I have said, and you weren't at the Irish Language Working Group table because your party isn't big enough. I was. I raised all those issues with Sinn Féin and SDLP. This should not be about developing an industry around Irish. This is about those people who speak the language in the community, those people who want to learn it and want to see it as part of their wider cultural experience.
But nobody's stopping them learning it. They can learn it perfectly well without an Irish Language Act, just as you can learn French or German or anything else. You don't need an Irish Language Act to learn Irish.
There are, well, first of all, we as part of the UK have signed up to international treaties, so we have to adhere to those. So we do need a legislative framework. The fact that
we
stand behind. Yes, we do, Jim, and you know we do.
We do not need, under the Council of Europe, a legislative framework. We have identified various minority languages. It does not anywhere stipulate that you must have an Irish Language Act.
Under the Minority Languages Act, we do. And if you listened and you did, and I've said this to you before, Jim, if you did your research a wee bit more, you would actually inform yourself on this. Me, as a unionist, for example, I see the benefit that has come to Scotland through their Gaelic Act. I think that maybe in some ways Wales have gone too far. I think that we as legislators, if we get the draft, the skeleton of the bill, can go to the Assembly floor and debate these issues, bring in experts, bring the Welsh Commissioner, the Scottish Commissioner, tell us what they did that was good, what wasn't, what didn't work, and then we can bring forward a bill that works for everybody in Northern Ireland. This Irish language doesn't just belong to Sinn Féin. It works. It belongs to the island of Ireland. And as
you
legislators,
told,
on a part of this... As legislators on the part of this, we have to provide for this minority language, whether you like it or not, Jim.
You haven't told me why you need an Irish Language Act in order to be able to learn and to speak Irish. I'm still waiting to hear the answer to that.
Well, it's not just about learning and speaking. It is also about issues around some parts of the legal system in terms of official recognition of the language, so that wills, for example, can be read through our courts. We do not agree. We do not agree with this automatic right for people to have court cases before we get onto that, court cases to be heard in Irish. There is a two-stage test that has to be met before the courts will hear other language, hear their hearings in other languages, and we think that that very much is robust enough at the minute.
Of course, so, you're not writing this legislation. You're not even involved in the DUP Sinn Féin negotiations. You're not fronting up and deciding what's going to be involved. You're going to accept what's handed down to you.
Well, neither do you, Jim, and that's part of the problem as well. You are saying no, 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 when you don't actually know what's in it. Although Paula,
I'm saying no, because we don't need it, and I'm saying no, because we can't afford it.
Paula, one of the problems for many unionists...
Is Paula seriously saying that in a situation where we can't fix our potholes...
And you've already made that point, Jim.
..and our hospitals, that we should...
I'm just moving on, Jim, because I know you are very pushed for time.
Go to that on Irish.
Paula, unionists, one of the problems for many of them is that they do not know what is inside it. So when they hear issues and problems that there could be, that is why there is resistance. Surely it is fair to ask, what is going to be inside this bill? What will it contain? Will it be standalone? Will it not?
Well, what we've said is, as I say, three bills that are inextricably linked that would be laid before the Assembly at the same time and then debated. We published our proposals way back in September on our website, on our social media accounts. I have talked consistently about this over the last 4 or 5 months. You know, people have come to me and asked me questions. Even my own party members are emailing me this morning just for looking for clarity on stuff. We very much share a lot of the unionist side of the house concern around this, and our proposals are not based on cost.
So what are your colleagues asking you, Paula?
Well, it was more just around the issue of official recognition, for example, for Irish. And you know, the response would be that in somewhere like South Africa, there are 11 official languages, but that the prominent one then would obviously be English, and our proposals then ensure that that's enshrined enough that English is the common language of commerce.
Okay, in 2000...
But are you proposing Irish as an official language?
What, sorry?
He's asked you, are you proposing it as an official language?
Well, it will be officially recognised.
No. Are you proposing it as an official language in Northern Ireland?
Well, it will be an official language. And I've said to you...
That was a yes, Jim. That was a yes.
English is not... English will be the primary language. When I met with the Ulster Unionist Party, this was one of their concerns. That is rubber stamped within the proposal.
Okay, well, just to go back to 2015 and Carolyn Cullen, who put forward these proposals for what would be in the Irish language legislation, top of that list was official status for the language. Just tell me if there's any of these that you or the Alliance Party would say no to. Provision for the right to speak Irish in the courts, English and Irish to be equal in the Assembly, the creation of an Irish language commissioner, public bodies to recognise the status of the language. Any of those so far, Paula, that you would say, no, we would not as a party be happy with those?
Well, first of all, we're not totally signed up to this whole dual language in the Assembly. As we know, very few people read Hansard in English. We don't want to create an industry there where people are vigorously translating just for the sake of it. The role of the Commissioner, as I said earlier, would need to be debated. There will need to be somebody there because we have demonstrated as a collective within the Assembly that we can't be trusted to not... politicise the language.
Okay.
We need to take that out.
So you've mentioned within the Assembly, what about the provision of the right to speak Irish in the courts?
I've just referenced that a couple of minutes ago, that you could speak Irish, that there's a two-stage test that has to be passed for and at the minute it is there. You know, if somebody needs to speak in Polish, then they have to show that they cannot communicate in English. And again, I don't have the exact wording for the two-stage test, but it is robust and it is being used at the minute.
Is that not a reasonable point, Jim?
Oh, there's absolutely no justification for changing the current arrangements in the courts, but the demand of Sinn Féin and in the draft bill that you're talking about is to do exactly that, to give one the luxury, even though you can perfectly well speak English, to insist that the whole proceedings.
Yes, but if someone, as Paula has outlined, for example,
proposal,
can only speak in Irish, surely the provision should be there for them in, for example, the courts.
Well, the provision is already there for them. If you're Polish or come from the Gaelic in west of Ireland and cannot speak English and cannot understand English, if there is such a person and you are accused in the courts, you are entitled to translation provisions and all of that. That already
so
there,
therefore, Paula Bradshaw,
the
why would we need that?
The demand is for, at your behest, even though you can speak English, that your proceedings will be conducted in Irish.
Paula?
That's the demand.
That's our position. We don't see that needs to change at all. Jim has just made my point for me.
Okay. But the problem is that it's not the Alliance Party's bill we're talking about. It's the Sinn Féin bill. It's Carl McCullion's bill that we're talking about.
No. Certainly, I have looked at Carl McCullion's bill. Ours is a fair distance back down the road from that.
There will be some, Paula, that will ask, have you not been to some extent shut out of the talks? You know, what input will you really in your party have?
This was our input and we weren't asked to do it, you're right. We developed these proposals in the summer because we were so frustrated that the two big parties couldn't reach an accommodation around this issue. But we did engage and consult with all the political parties around a series of meetings over the summer months.
I don't want to sound like I'm being rude, Paul. I'm trying to be respectful, but did they to an extent ignore you?
I don't think they did. And if you listen very carefully to what Arlene said yesterday about what's not in the bill, is exactly the same as ours, what's not in our bill either. And I think that, and if she's talking about a package of language and cultural acts, that's exactly what we have here. I feel that we've very much shaped this discussion. We never said that it was a finished article. This was a set of proposals. But again, we did our research. It's very much based on international best practice, what's going on across the British Isles.
Okay.
And what all of the, importantly, what all the parties were saying in the Irish working group, Irish language working group, and the subsequent meetings. So we think that these are not the Alliance proposals. These are off the back of those series of intensive meetings we had with all of them.
Okay. Paula Bradshaw from the Alliance Party and Jim Allister from the TUV, thank you very much.